Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening. We are winding our way into June, the last few days of school. Summer break is coming. We have...
Big summer plans?
Well, yes, I do have some big summer plans. One is something I'm going to celebrate, the 40th anniversary of...
Oh, so you're throwing my own plug right
short
back
Short Circuit.
Me.
this coming weekend.
This weekend.
That's exciting.
As endorsed an official Sony, the 40th anniversary of Johnny Five is Alive, Short Circuit.
It's exciting.
It's on Goonies weekend, so Goonies 41st. But we have so much stuff going on, so you just need to go to shortcircuit40.com. And it's the number written out, okay. not written out, like with the actual numerals 4 and 0, shortcircuit40.com. But so much stuff going on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, mostly Saturday and Sunday, but tons of stuff going on. One of the things I'm most excited about, we've got workshops.
Oh, I like
little
that.
Little breakout sessions. So film production with Gary Foster, Rise of the Robots with Eric Allard. He's the guy that made Johnny Five
That's
and
amazing.
Other robots. He made the Energizer Bunny.
Did he really?
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
That's lasting.
Yeah, and he's got like a full-size giant one. We may get it here someday. Character creation with Tim Blaney. Script pet peeves with the guy that wrote the script. But listen to this, just this list of people that are coming. Steve, and you can get autographs and hang out with them a little bit, selfies. Steve Guttenberger, Ali Sheedy. Robert Davi is coming back by popular demand. He was here for the Goonies 40th, and everyone liked him so much. Tim Blaney, the voice of Johnny Five.
Johnny. Okay.
We've got Jason James Richter, the kid from Free Willy.
Oh, fun.
Who's a native Oregonian.
Okay.
And he's like all into preservation of whales.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't that cool?
That's pretty cool.
Mark Marshall's coming back. We love him. He was an assistant at Amblin with Steven Spielberg. He was involved in just so many movies, Free Willy, The Goonies. Just the list is really quite staggering. And he's just a delightful guy, and he's written a book that's really pretty cool. Joey Kramer from Flight of the Navigator and other 80s hits. And then director John Badham. Of Short Circuit.
Oh, that's awesome.
He's also the director of Saturday Night Fever and War Games, among others.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
This is quite a lineup.
We've got puppeteers from Leica and Shadow Machine.
Perfect.
So, yeah.
From Portland.
It's going to be crazy.
So, I'm going to put our guest on the spot. Have you seen Short Circuit?
It's been a while, but yes.
But yes, okay.
Yeah.
You know, filmed here.
Yes.
In Astoria.
Yes.
Very proud of it. And released 40 years ago.
We were geeking out before we went on the air. But we won't go into
about other movies.
Other movies, because it's not a made in Oregon film.
That you guys were geeking out on?
Yes.
No.
It's actually, it was filmed in West Virginia, wasn't it?
Short Circuit?
No.
No.
Oh, no, Matewan. Matewan. Yes, it was filmed right there.
Okay.
Right there.
Yeah. I thought it was in the right place.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I am going to introduce our guest. We're going to come back to him, though, too. But that is the voice of Craig Preisser. He's the 4-H program coordinator with the OSU Extension Office. Thanks for being here today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
Yeah. And he's got a great radio voice.
He does. He's done this before.
Well, my dad, I come from good stock. My dad was the director of theater at West Virginia Wesleyan College for forever, all of my lifetime while he was still with us. We referred to him as the occasional voice of God. So, he was, if there was a church that needed a God's booming voice coming in, that was my dad.
Okay, so when you public speak, do you ever need a microphone?
Well, for radio, yeah.
Well, of course.
But if I'm like in a 4-H camp or, no, you can hear me.
See, oh, that's awesome.
I know how to project to the back of a room. Yeah.
I kind of thought you did. See, I rarely use a mic, and it kind of sometimes annoys groups that I'm like, oh, don't worry. If it's only like 100 people, I'm not going to need it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. My dad was dramatic arts. My mom was speech communication. So, yeah.
Oh, yes. So they've told you how to talk.
I'm good there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, what I say is a whole other matter, but you can hear me. You can hear me.
I think we might have my replacement if you
I know, like, right? I'm always looking for fill-ins.
To move up. All right, so we got a big show. So let's get right to the history highlights. These are things that happen tomorrow, June 1st, as always. Icebreakers, things to talk about around the coffee or around the breakfast table. So I'm quizzing you both on the first one. No date on this one. Ooh. So it's June 1st. What year? The first pay telephone service in the U.S. is installed in New Haven, Connecticut. So pay phones.
Oh, I don't know. I'm not going to get this right.
I don't know why, but the number 1924 is sticking in my head.
That's a good guess.
1936.
Well, see, I would have been 50 years off. Prepare, you should like put hats on or something because your heads are going to explode. 1880.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
First payphone.
I would have been guessing 1920s, 1930s. Yeah. I never would have thought 1880.
Okay.
So they monetized that right away, didn't they?
Right. Yeah. That's true.
All right. Good for them. All right. So 1660. Mary Dyer is hanged for defying a law banning Quakers from the Massachusetts Bay Company. Hmm. Those friendly pilgrims that just wanted everybody to have religious freedom.
Right. Except.
Except everybody else.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So Mary Dyer just wanted to be a nice Quaker in the Massachusetts Bay Colony and got herself hanged for it. All right. 1792. Kentucky is admitted as the 15th U.S. state.
Welcome to the party.
Kentucky. I've never actually been to Kentucky.
I drove through it. It was very flat.
Really? I would not have guessed Kentucky being flat.
Well, what I drove through was flat. I drove from Nashville to Indianapolis, and it was completely flat. I mean, there was like nothing, not even like little rolling hills.
Eastern Kentucky is part of the Appalachian Mountain range. So Eastern Kentucky is
where
got the rolling hills.
There
and
we go.
Yeah.
All right.
And they love their horses, too.
Yeah.
I've heard about that. Yeah. 1796. Tennessee is admitted as the 16th U.S. state.
Welcome again. Welcome to the party.
I like that they're on the same day.
I know.
I wonder if they send each other birthday cards. Number 15 and number 16. I also have never been to Tennessee.
Oh, you need to go to Tennessee.
I kind of think I would like Tennessee.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Okay. 1869. Thomas Edison is granted his first patent for the electric vote recorder. U.S. patent number 90,646. Electric votes.
Interesting.
In 1869.
So that one I wouldn't have guessed.
It was all rigged.
I wouldn't have guessed that one either.
I wonder, was it the Venezuelans or who supposedly? All right, moving on.
Yeah, what was his accuracy?
Yeah. 1905. Lewis and Clark's Centennial Exposition opens in Portland, Oregon. 1905. This was huge.
Okay.
And it was huge for Astoria, too, even though it happened in Portland. So it's kind of the whole reason that they find where Fort Clatsop was in preparation for this.
Okay.
And they mark it with a flagpole. So, all right. 1926. Andy Griffith is born.
Oh, happy birthday.
I don't usually do the birthdays, but I like Andy Griffith.
I do, yes.
Although, have you watched the Andy Griffith Show recently?
No. I mean, I have watched it, but no.
It's still a very good show, and it's wholesome, but wow, it really is from the time period.
Is it?
Yeah, I stumbled on an episode not too long ago, and Aunt B thought about she wanted to get a car and learn how to drive. And Andy was having none of that.
Oh.
You know, there's no reason for her to be driving.
Parts of it did not age well.
Yeah, and it wasn't just because she was older. It was because she was a woman.
Oh,
what did she need?
Yeah.
What do you need to drive around for?
Right.
And then she secretly was talking to the mechanic, and he like helped her pick out a car. And,
oh, good for her.
And he had to think about it and decide. And she was like, I have my own money. And he still had to think about it and decide whether it was all right. So,
yeah.
All right. But I do like the movie he was in, No Time for Sergeants. It's pretty funny. Okay. Marilyn Monroe is also born on 1926.
Okay.
1974, Dr. Heimlich first publishes his technique for rescuing choking victims.
Ooh, yes.
So before that, 1974, everybody choked to death. All right, but our history highlight that I think had the most impact, 1980, CNN is launched.
Ooh, yes.
24/7 news, nonstop, in our faces, and that leads to other channels, and just the news was everywhere suddenly, instead of Walter Cronkite in the evening and we're done.
I know, changed news forever.
So as a media person,
I love it.
You do love it.
I do.
Okay.
It for good and bad, right? News was changed, but that access to information is still very important in my mind, right? So giving people access, it's how we give that access and whether we're accurate in doing so. And then that's left up to the people that are giving it, right? Like whether they're going to be accurate or but yes, I mean, I like it. All right. I would never go work for them. I knew quite a few people that did, and they didn't pay very well.
Oh, really? Just they didn't pretty pay low. Well, or they didn't no. like
No, they the just didn't pay well. Just very low. I mean, because it's CNN, mm-hmm. so, you know, they pay their top folks a uh-huh. lot, and then people that are below them, writers, producers, I mean, tons of people, right? Videographers, photographers.
So what I'm always curious on is when something happens in a remote area, like, say, let's say West Virginia, and suddenly there's some, obviously somewhat of a local reporter, mm-hmm. and they say, like, CNN correspondent. Is,
they do.
Is that just the local TV station loaning their footage? Yep. And then does he get paid extra? Or is nope. it just that TV station?
Nope. I was on CNN several times. And you're considered an affiliate or a partner for them. So they give you access to their news, right? Because you're giving them access to your news. So, yeah, you just... but I don't know that I would never have given a CNN tagline, though. They usually are pretty particular about that. So... that you would know that it's a local.
Oh, okay.
So if it says they're with CNN, then they probably are.
Okay. I'm probably making that up.
Yeah. Well, here's somebody who's not going to make anything up. Craig Preser, welcome to our show.
Thank you.
The new 4-H program coordinator for Clatsop County.
Spam.
You work for OSU Extension Office. Mm-hmm. I love all the things they do. I love 4-H. My girls are in 4-H, just so you know as well.
Great.
And we're glad you're here. And you moved here recently.
I first set foot, well, officially as a new guy, March 30th was my first
That's
day.
Pretty recent.
So I'm about 2 months in.
Months
in. Yeah.
So before we get to your background, how on earth did you end up here?
Yeah.
Well, I was a 4-H in West Virginia. They're still called 4-H agents rather than program coordinators. Some states use 4-H educator. But I was a 4-H agent in West Virginia, grew up in the 4-H program in West Virginia. I was an agent for about 20 years, but I've been a 4-H member and volunteer for, you know, since 1976. I've stepped away from that for a little bit, thought the grass was going to be greener in some other areas, and it was not. I discovered that 4-H and working with youth and youth development and those types of things is really where my passion is and what I'm good at. So I decided to step back in and started casting about, looking at opportunities all over the country. And Oregon opened up and before I knew it, you know, I applied for the job and next thing I knew, I'm loading the truck and
they're like,
didn't
when
head to Beverly. I loaded up the truck and headed to Clatsop County, I guess is the way the song should read, sing yeah. now. But I'm loving it here. My wife still remains in West Virginia. She's because it was such a quick turnaround, she stayed home to figure out what we're going to do with the house there. She'll be joining me at some point out here. And we're both, so far, I'm loving it out here. Now, rainy season hasn't started, so I'll reserve judgment. But
so had you,
I have invested in a good raincoat.
Oh,
so
good.
That's good. Yeah.
Had you ever visited Oregon or Astoria before?
I had been to Portland before.
Okay.
I drove evidently, so flew into Portland for a conference in 2013, I think, and got to drive around a little bit. We did not come into Astoria that day, but drove around the countryside a little bit, got to Cannon Beach. So it's
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Haystack Rock, I guess. Is that Cannon
is,
Beach?
Yes.
I'm trying to make sure my geography is correct here. And we went into the Tillamook Creamery and stuff like that. But so I enjoyed that. But no, we've had family friends move to Portland and into Eugene. And I don't know anybody ever that moved to Oregon from West Virginia and has regretted it.
Right.
So
I think
that helped.
Like it.
When it came time to make the decision, is this right for our family? That made the decision way much, much easier.
Oh, that's nice. So let's go back. So tell us where you grew up and sort of what led you into 4-H as a kid.
Well, I grew up in Buchanan, West Virginia, which is a small town. The county is just a little bit smaller than Clatsop County, about 30,000 people in the county. Buchanan itself is the only incorporated town. It's the county seat there. my mom and dad moved there to take a job at West Virginia Wesleyan. I think I said before that my dad was a dramatic arts professor there and my mom was in speech communication. So, the plan was they moved in from Ohio when everybody else was moving out. It's called the Great Migration. If you do West Virginia history, in the 1960s, there was a great migration out of West Virginia and the coal fields in West Virginia to Detroit, Cleveland, those kinds of areas looking for jobs, Baltimore and the shipyards. My parents were like the salmon swimming upstream and moved into West Virginia. And their plan was to just be there for 5 years and then head back to Ohio. 58 years later, my mom's still there. So,
did she just fall in love with it?
Yes. And it's just Buchanan was your typical small town. It's not quite Mayberry, just a great little town, college town. And life is simple there, and it just kind of gets in your blood. Very much, I would assume, very much like Astoria does to folks in the North Pacific Northwest. Once you move there, and it just becomes part of you. And I'm already experiencing that after just 2 months.
You just get plugged in.
Yeah. So, besides the university, what was the industry or commerce in the surrounding area? Was it coal?
It was not coal in Upshur County, which is in the North Central region. Coal fields are primarily down in the southern and southwestern part of the state. But in North Central West Virginia, Clarksburg, Morgantown, those types of places, logging, timber industry. There is some coal, but primarily timber. Right now in Upshur County, the biggest employer is the education system and the college and Walmart.
Oh, wow. That's quite a mix.
So it's your typical small college town kind of place. But just one of those idyllic little places that, just can go play in the woods and be safe and life is good there.
And I've been through the state and I've had went to school with a guy from there. But is the entire state, or more specifically the area you were in, is it all mountain country, or are there sections that would not be qualified?
Yes, West Virginia is the only state that is entirely within the Appalachian region. The entire state falls within the Appalachian region. So it is what West Virginians consider mountainous. Now, in regards to comparing it to the Cascades and other mountains, the mountains are much older in West Virginia. The Appalachian Range is much older. So the mountains there's been a whole lot more erosion. So we say mountains, you guys would just consider them really steep hills, I think. But it's rolling. It's constant. My hometown, Buchanan, is on the Appalachian plateau. So it's a little flatter there. We're right at the foothills of the actual mountains before you get into ski resort country and things like that. The southern part of the state is really mountainous, and that's where the coal industry lies. Along the Ohio River, the Ohio River Basin is also fairly calm. It's just rolling foothills at that point. But yeah, it's not a flat state at all.
So if this kid from New York showed up into your town and said, well, it's really the Appalachian.
No, we'd throw an
apple. How fast would I get thrown out of town?
We would throw an apple at you. So, yeah.
Oh, no.
It's Appalachia, and we'll fight anybody who says different. So.
So growing up, what were the activities that you were doing? And then what led you in as a kid to 4-H?
I had a Mayberry childhood. I can't complain about my childhood at all. We lived in town, Central Avenue, and ours was the street that everybody, all the kids from all around the neighborhood came, and we had kickball and kick the can and ghost in the graveyard and all those games emanating from our house. There was a vacant lot two doors down, and that's where we grew up and played touch football and all the kid games that we played back in the 70s and 80s. But I was very much a part of 4-H and Cub Scouts it was a different time back then. And my parents said, you've got to pick one activity to go with rather than doing them all. I chose 4-H because there were, I'll be very honest, it was go to camp with just boys in the Boy Scouts or go to camp with boys and girls in 4-H. And so I went for the opportunity to talk to girls too. So
but picking one activity and then saying you're doing 4-H, I mean, you get to do I mean,
oh yeah,
so
that doesn't
different.
Limit. I mean, yeah, 4-H even back then as now, it's so much more than cows and cooking, which everybody right. assumes it is.
That could be a tagline.
It was actually it was for a while back, way back. It's more than cows and cooking. It just as you grow through 4-H now, this is what I'm hoping to continue here in Clatsop County. I inherited a really strong program, a vibrant program. But what, as you move through, as you age through 4-H, there are opportunities to do things as a young person, elementary age, middle school age, and then you can grow into expanded opportunities and more leadership types of opportunities as a high school student. And then the world opens up to you even further as a young volunteer and a leader and things like that. It truly can be, as in my case, it truly can be a lifetime participation model.
And what were the activities you were choosing back then?
The projects I took. Now, West Virginia is a little different from Oregon.
Sure.
4-H. West Virginia is all about camp, 4-H camp.
Okay.
Every county, there are 55 counties in West Virginia, and every county has their own county camp.
Oh, man.
And
that's
then
cool.
there's a state camp at Jackson's Mill, which was the very first, it's part of West Virginia's pioneering spirit. The very first 4-H camp ever was held in Randolph County, West Virginia, Camp Good Luck in 1915. By 1922, the very first state 4-H camp was held at Jackson's Mill, West Virginia, in 1922. So 4-H camping originated in West Virginia, and we've clung to that. It was just a large part here in Oregon, and there's nothing wrong with this. It's just a different
model.
Yeah, it's very much about county fair, which is the same. West Virginia is a little bit more of an anomaly when we talk that much about camping. Oregon and most of our other states do have a strong agriculture and fair direction or prioritize the fair a little bit more than we did when I was growing up in West Virginia, but it's great. So the projects I took as a youngster were we lived in town, so there weren't a whole lot of options for us, for me and my brothers and sisters, for agricultural base. I took the dog projects. But I took a lot of the cooking projects and bicycling projects and first aid, those kinds of things. But I really enjoyed the cooking projects. My wife appreciates that I took the cooking.
Sure.
So what point does that transition from this is a youth thing that I'm doing and I'm learning to, oh my gosh, this has become my career? How does that happen?
That's a good question. It just kind of happened. I stuck with 4-H as a volunteer because initially it let me go back to camp. As a young adult, I got to be a counselor at camps and things like that. So I stayed connected. I was raised by parents that felt very strongly about if you're part of a program, you give back to that program. Mm-hmm. And so, I tried to stay in as a volunteer and as a leader and things like that. And then it just kind of happened. The agent that I had growing up retired, and I had just finished working on my master's degree, and they said, hey, we need someone. I said, let's go. Let's do this.
So when you went to school, college, what did you think you were going to do with your life at that point? What were you studying?
I bounced around. I was not entirely focused as a college student, I think is probably the best way to say that. I was a good kid and kept my nose clean, but I just didn't have a clear definition of what I wanted to do. I liked working with kids. I thought about being a teacher, following my parents' footsteps. I thought about being a musician, those kinds of things. And, it just, when the opportunity came to do my 4-H work and the volunteer work and the camping work and get paid for it, mm-hmm. holy moly, why would I pass that up? So
did you actually replace the guy that retired?
The woman that retired had been there for 30 years, and then she started in 1970. I took over in 2005, 2006, December of 2005, and I stayed for another 20 years. So since when I finished up in 2025,
there'd only been two 4-H agents since 1970.
That's crazy.
So, yeah. Yeah. It's really, it's a 4-H and extension is a calling more than it is just a pastime. It's not something you get into because you want to make money. it's just, it really speaks to us to be able to help kids and help.
So is that kind of normal that somebody does 20 years and the person before you did 30 years or
changing? Not to that extent, okay. Usually. But yeah, there folks, it's like I said, it's kind of a calling. And if the county's happy with you and you're happy with the county, folks tend to stick around and see things through. I had colleagues that had, you know, grandchildren of kids they worked with, you know, coming to 4-H camp. I never got quite to that point. I had young men and women who were children of my earlier 4-H'ers.
Well, that's amazing. Yeah. So we've only got about 3 minutes left, talk a little bit about how the local program, I know you're new here, but how do you get involved or what are any of the needs, either financial or volunteer-wise?
Well, if you're interested in becoming a 4-H'er or volunteering as a 4-H leader or volunteer, you can simply reach out to our office and give us a call at the Clatsop County Extension office, and we'll be happy to find some place where you fit, regardless of your interests. We've got sewing clubs, we've got livestock clubs, we've got dog clubs, we've got any number of interest clubs. If you're interested in it, we hopefully can find a fit for you somewhere, whether that's as a member or a volunteer.
About how many kids are touched by the program every year?
We have somewhere in the neighborhood of 350, 400 kids signed up for various things. We'll have somewhere in the neighborhood of 147 kids doing livestock and static exhibits at the county fair in July. We've got 147 volunteers working with those kids. So
that's incredible. So do you have the phone number again? I don't know if you said the phone number.
503. I'm still You're new. Okay. I'm still new. I don't have it in front of me.
I shouldn't have done that to you.
But I'd have to get my phone open.
If they just Google County Extension Office.
Clatsop County Extension.
They'll find you.
4-H, right. Yeah.
Terrific.
Sorry about that.
We shouldn't have asked you that when you're...
I can tell you it's the first saved phone number on my phone. But that's
Well, it's like I never was able to give my cell phone number to people for the longest time.
Yeah.
I never call.
I apologize for that.
So you've been here about 2 months. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you have discovered that you were surprised at that you didn't expect when you were moving here?
4-H is 4-H. So, you know, positive youth development, you're doing the same things. The administration of it's a little different here. I'm not saying it's wrong. It's just new for me. I'm really excited about the Clatsop County Fair coming up starting July 19 for 4-H exhibits. The actual county fair itself starts a few days later, but Sunday the 19th is when we start with our 4-H exhibits. Just the sheer volume of folks and volunteers to be able to say I've got 147 fully accredited and vetted volunteers is amazing to me. And I have really been overwhelmed by the passion and the support and the involvement of the entire Clatsop County community in the 4-H program here. That's such a blessing for these kids, such a blessing for me as I make the transition into working here. But that's been a real pleasant surprise is the just entire involvement here and the care that the Clatsop County community has.
Well, that is fantastic. And we wish good luck for you and more programs and hope that nothing but success. People are always pulling for you when you're here and it's a good program. So thank you very much. And we'll check in with you in about a year.
Yeah, I'd be happy to come back anytime.
All right. Thanks for listening. Go make some history. We'll catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.
This is KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook, and also streaming live at kmun.org.